Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get used to the mantra, all gas, no break.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPaw11. I'm joined today by Bob Glauber of Newsday, at Bob Glauber on Twitter. Bob, how you doing this afternoon?
Will, I'm doing great. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. It's exciting times, free agency approaching, the draft and things like that. You know, that's the Jets Super Bowl for most fans. So we're all looking forward to some exciting times.
Yeah, it's a good time of year. Especially if you're a Jet fan coming off a 2-14 season. That's what you got to live for, right? It is what it is. We've been here a few times before.
Yeah, unfortunately. But it seems like things are kind of going different. And, you know, and with the new hire, obviously, of Robert Saleh. What were your thoughts on the hire initially? Were you impressed or kind of concerned from a defensive guy coming in, obviously, with the offense being lackluster the last few years?
No, I'm impressed. Look, he's a good coach. You want a good coach. You want a good leader of men. You want a guy who's not going to get bowled over by the situation. You know, New York's a big deal. I think this is the right guy. Christopher Johnson said he was looking for a CEO type, and I think he's got that in Robert Saleh. So I'm bullish on him, and I think the Jets are going to be in good hands. I don't know that they're going to win right away. There's still several players away, but I think they got the right coach. And, man, when you got the right coach, you got half the equation figured out, if not more.
Yeah, no, I agree. I felt like he was somebody that everyone around the league speaks so highly of. And when you have guys that are on other teams pushing for other guys, like when Richard Sherman came out and pushed for Deshaun Watson to go to New York, like that doesn't happen often unless you really, really respect somebody or Richard Sherman wants to be a Jet. And either way, you don't see that often, though.
Right. And Richard Sherman is pushing, he was really behind Robert Saleh, and that's a big deal. Now, Sherman is, say what you will, some people don't, he rubs some people the wrong way by being so outspoken. That's what you want. You want a guy to kind of tell it like it is. But Sherman is one of the biggest advocates for Robert Saleh, and he had a bunch of them on that 49ers team. They grew to really like him, respect him. That's bigger than liking. And I think Saleh is the kind of guy that will take the reins and grow as a coach. This idea of CEO, I get it because, you asked before about, you're worried that Saleh's defensive minded. Well, they just tried it with an offensive minded guy. How'd that go?
Not the best 3 years of my 2 years of my life. I'll tell you that much.
So that was a disaster right there. It shows that, you've got to hire the right guy, and that is a leader. That's so important. Adam Gase spent no time with the defense, just none. And you just can't have that on a football team.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm excited for it. And I guess that kind of leads us into the biggest talking point of the offseason is I'm a huge Sam Darnold advocate, as everyone else that listens to the podcast knows, but I also am realistic with there's a lot of different options that could happen this offseason, whether it's drafting a quarterback at two, trading for a quarterback like Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson, which I don't think is remotely realistic, but especially Russell Wilson. And then, or you trade back and build around Sam. What do you think? What does your gut tell you on March 1st? And then if you were the GM, you're Joe Douglas, what would you do? It's a two-part question.
All right. Well, I think that they value Sam Darnold as a quarterback, but I think they see limited upside. You know, it's hard to judge Sam Darnold in a complete way because it's been so difficult for him. Three different offensive systems and coaches. Three different offensive coordinators, two different systems. But still, you know, you're looking at a guy who had a bad offensive line for much of his career. Inadequate play. He was hurt with his shoulder last year. He had mono the year before. He showed promise as a rookie. He really did take those steps. And I thought he was going to kind of take that second year jump. It didn't happen. So, you know, there is talent there. There's no question, but you know, I think they will look at all their options. That includes looking at what it would take for Deshaun Watson trade. Russell Wilson, I don't think that's happening. I think Russell Wilson is, he's in that midlife crisis that a lot of quarterbacks go through that have been with the team for a long time. You know, I saw that with Phil Simms back in the 80s, for God's sake. So this is not unusual, and I think they will work that out. So it's going to be Deshaun Watson or a drafted quarterback or Sam Darnold. I would say at this point I'd lean toward a drafted quarterback, building brick by brick and in a methodical way that Joe Douglas has done so far. So now if you throw everything in a trade for Deshaun Watson, you know, the dynamic is totally different because you're going to be losing pieces. If you lose a Quinnen Williams, if you lose multiple first round picks, you know, if you lose other players that Houston might want, you run the risk of Deshaun Watson coming here and spinning his wheels because there isn't enough talent around him. The question is, does Deshaun Watson want to come here? Does he want to go to Miami? I would lean toward him going to Miami. It's, you know, there's no income tax, state income tax.
I mean, that's, you make a lot of money. That's important.
It really is a factor. But more than that is that, you know, Miami is more of a win now type of team than the Jets, certainly. And I think they have the draft capital, thanks to Houston in part, to make that happen. So if you're asking me right here, right now, what happens with the Jets, I would say they trade Sam Darnold and draft a quarterback with that second overall pick.
That makes sense. To me, it's pretty funny that the two quarterbacks that are the veteran Pro Bowlers that are, you know, all pros that are on the market are the Jets, who, you know, are linked to Russell Wilson, but they would be trading the picks they just got, you know, in the Jamal Adams trade. And then the Dolphins, who are a heavy favorite for Deshaun Watson, just would be trading back their own picks from the Tunsil trade. It's like,
I know
these teams, it's pretty crazy.
Yes, it is. It is crazy. It's weird. And it's like, you know, big round world out there, you know, things come around and they go around.
I don't know about, I agree with you, the Russell Wilson thing. I think that's, yes, could he be moved? Sure. But like, it doesn't make any sense from a cap hit perspective. I know it's like $39 million the Seahawks would eat. Yeah. And like with a 70-year-old coach, for them to rebuild doesn't make a lot of sense. Personally, I just don't see that. And then Deshaun, I think, is realistic. It could get done, but I don't, again, it's like, are the Jets going to be willing to give up what it takes? And does he want to be here? There's so many factors to it.
Yeah. There's a lot of factors to it. And don't discount that. You know, you're going to have to give up so much for Deshaun Watson. What are you left with? You've got a 25-year-old franchise quarterback, but you know, Houston had that and some star defensive players and they went 4-12. Now the bottom fell out of that season. So I don't know if that would happen here, but still, you know, that's a big risk that you take, especially in a division with a strong Buffalo team that is not going anywhere for quite a long time. They're being built very methodically and very well, and they're going to be a contending team for years to come.
In terms of like the guys in the draft, obviously, you know, Zach Wilson seems to be a kind of a favorite right now, but a lot of people, I know people turn on the Jets, speak so highly of Justin Fields. There's obviously the Trey Lance wild card. I don't think Mac Jones at two is, I would be very upset if that's what, you know, happens, and which I don't think will. But of those two, I guess three guys, if you want to throw a Trey Lance in there, do you have one that you would prefer, or it's kind of like, I just think that rookie contracts, you know, upside, all that stuff.
Yeah, no, it's a fair question. And it's like, you know, it's almost eeny, meeny, miny, moe. But I would probably lean toward Zach Wilson. You know, Justin Fields, I think, certainly has the experience. He's got the big time, you know, play with a big time team. He's been in big spots. But then you look at, well, the history of Ohio State quarterbacks is not a very good one. I don't think he goes into that pile, you know, with some of the more disappointing quarterbacks. I think Fields is a good player. Maybe the upside is a little bit limited, but man, he makes some throws that are really off the charts, and he's off the charts tough. So those are two things that you want in an NFL quarterback. And if it is Justin Fields, I don't know that, you know, you'd be disappointed if that were to be the choice. Now, they still may, you know, I don't know. I'm thinking about this. Do you keep Sam Darnold for that last year of his rookie contract? You get greedy a little bit. See if you can coach him up. See if LaFleur can kind of coax something out of him, get better. You want to make a trade next year? Okay. Or maybe he becomes the guy. You know, it wasn't that long ago where it was not that unusual to draft two quarterbacks high up in a close, you know, year's proximity. And then you just go with a better guy as time goes on. So, I think that's – I just don't dismiss that as a possibility.
Then yeah, I'm a big believer of that. So, I love hearing it.
Keep your guy Darnold, right? And you'll be happy.
Well, I just would – I like the idea of the roster so barren of talent, minus the few guys you mentioned. I know, you know, there's the promise of a Denzel Mims, and Beckton showed a lot of flashes this year and things like that. But if you were able to trade back from two and I know this is probably – I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but if Sam isn't good next year and you still have all this talent, you still now have pieces to be able to move up for a guy if you wanted to trade up in the draft or – you know, then you'd know. But I also think that's maybe you're wasting a year of some of these guys' talent if it doesn't go well. So I guess it's – I see both sides of it, I guess you should say.
Yeah, I think if you are convinced and have conviction on a guy this year, you do it and you don't waste time. You just take it at number two. I like – you know, look, the idea of moving down, okay, I get it. Get more pieces. But, man, if you got a quarterback there at two – who knows when you're going to get there? You hope you never get there again, but it's potentially a once in a generation type thing. Unfortunately for the Jets, it's a little bit more than once in a generation, but
once every 3 years.
You know what I'm saying? You just don't want to be in that position, you know, time after time. And if you feel good about one of these guys at two, you just take them.
You know, I agree. I think that's the bottom line is I can't be upset with whatever they do because Joe Douglas is giving me no reason to not trust him at this point. Has it been perfect with some of the stuff of, you know, Robbie and guys like that, or maybe, but I also think he knew what was with the roster, what he was going to have. And he's put himself in out position. They have what $670 million in cap space plus, you know, with Anderson and a few of the other guys they could cut. And then the amount of draft capital, I don't think anyone, I mean, you could tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't know if anyone thought for a box safety with no leverage, they were going to get 2 1s and a 3. And free up cap space potentially. I just, those are the things, like, it's hard not to trust the guy.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think Joe Douglas is a trustworthy guy. He can kind of take it. He's tough. He's, you know, he's an old offensive lineman. And those guys just put their heads down and work hard. That trade for Jamal Adams, you know, the Jamal Adams trade was masterful to get two first round picks. And, you know, if Russell Wilson does get moved, I want to see Jamal woofing about, you know, Geno Smith or whatever.
People are going to not let him live that down, man. That'll be 2 years in a row. Twitter would be a zoo.
You know, Joe was under a lot of pressure to pay Jamal Adams, keep him. Why don't you keep your best players? You told us, hey, Jet for life, right? Well, things change. Markets change, and when you got two first-round picks and a third, and you got Dexter McDougal, he didn't work out, but, man, that guy was a quality starting player. That's a haul, and that's good work by a general manager. It's all you can expect.
Kind of segueing into more of the free agency and, you know, things like that, do you have some guys you've kind of identified you think they should go after or positions that you'd like to see them address in free agency? Because, obviously, they could address the whole roster. You could upgrade literally at every position. Yeah. But is there people that you – I know Douglas has mentioned building through the draft, and I don't expect him to, you know, personally go crazy spending, you know, he's not going to spend all $75 million of their cap space this year, but there's some guys you think, this is a guy I think would be well received if he was, you know, signed as a New York Jet.
Well, I think, you know, you can look at receiver, the receiving market, Allen Robinson, a couple of other guys that are going to pop free too. You know, receiver, it's not just the free agent guys. You've got to look longer term down the road. Receivers are going to get released. A lot of players are going to get released. You know, guy once played for the Giants might get released. So I don't subscribe to that. I think you go, if you're going to go for Odell Beckham, you better be a championship caliber team ready to win.
Strong locker room.
He's not going to be happy with going to a 2-14 team. So, but I think there are, you know, some players, I think that receiving market attracts me, but you know, Juju Smith-Schuster, are you going to spend that kind of money immediately and, you know, draw down your cap like that? We've seen that happen. Mike Maccagnan did that in that one year where it was a bit of a sugar high, and then it collapsed. So they're still paying for that. They're still paying for those mistakes. That's why I like Joe Douglas looking primarily through the draft, and then you make a couple of key signings. But if you're going to make a key signing now on the free agent market, it better be for long term, and it better be for a player in his early to mid 20s. Nothing. Don't mess around with, you know, older guys.
28, 29. Yeah, no. That's that Le'Veon, no. Mosley. Well, that, you know, the Anthony Barr thing was a disaster. I should have known right then. It was like, he's like, oh, Barr, I felt sick.
Barr was okay. I didn't mind Barr.
That would have been a good signing, in my opinion.
That would have been a good sign. He's a good player. It was him. Like, he was just having agita, and correctly so, about, you know, leaving a comfortable situation in Minnesota, and he ended up going back. I commend him for that, but I don't, you know, I think he was a good, there was good reasoning for Anthony Barr. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll never, that Buffalo game, you know, that's the trend on Twitter everyone's been seeing. It's like, oh, you had to be there. And like, I was looking at 16-0, you know, Sam's playing pretty well. Obviously, you know, they weren't clicking fully on offense, but Le'Veon looks like young. He looks good. And, you know, the Mosley had the best defensive first half I've seen from a guy since prime Revis in like 09. And then it was all over within 30 minutes.
Yeah, I know. And then there was the, and I can't remember his name. It was a Minnesota cornerback who they were trying to go for as many years ago. And his son just won the Super Bowl with Tampa.
Oh, Antoine Winfield?
Yeah, Winfield's son. Antoine Winfield had agreed to come to the Jets. Big deal. And then he backed out at the last minute. So that was like Anthony Barr was, you know, Winfield 2.0. To a lesser degree, because Winfield was the best, probably the best cornerback in the league at that point, or one of the best.
It's so funny to look at how, even just in one offseason, though, and to give Douglas credit, like, the Jets are viewed in such a different way that they won't, of course, they're going to have to overpay for some guys. And if Allen Robinson does pop up, or Tooney, or these guys, yes, of course, you're going to overpay for the superstar level guy. But the Jets have been known to overpay, you know, better than me, like, to overpay for everybody. It's always like, they're looking for 5 for $40, and the Jets somehow sign a 28-year-old guy for six-year, $50 million deal for no reason. And I just think Douglas drives a harder bargain and knows you either want to be here or you don't. And I think that's probably one of the most commendable things that I can say about him.
Totally. Now, Mike Tannenbaum was a good general manager, and they had good success, and they hit it right with Rex Ryan. He was aggressive. He wasn't afraid to make bold moves, but he'd be aggressive in terms of the cap. He'd always push the cap. He was a great accountant, and he knew how to manipulate that. But Douglas is much more traditional, build through the draft type of general manager, where, you know, sometimes as a GM, you got to be a little aggressive, and that's okay. It's different. It's not just, you know, your father's NFL teams anymore, where you just have all this time with draft picks. You've got to make moves, and you got to be aggressive. But Douglas, I think, has a good mix. He knows when to go for something, but he also knows how to just kind of build patiently. Now, one thing that I'm curious to see, now that Woody Johnson is back, how that's going to work. Now, Woody is a splash guy. He's been a splash guy, right? Go for Brett Favre. Yeah, it worked for a
while. Just gonna say Brett Favre is the one that sticks out the most.
I know. I lived that season. Go from 8-3 to 9-7, and the wheels fell off.
What a disaster! It
was really unfortunate, right? But I don't want him to get in the way. I don't want him to say, "Joe, get Deshaun Watson. Give up 3 first round picks. Give up Quinnen Williams. Give up Sam Darnold. Do whatever you have to do to get this guy. I want him." Man, if that dynamic starts happening, there's a problem. And this is why you've got to let Joe Douglas handle this decision and this series of decisions and Robert Saleh. But those two professionals have got to do it, and don't get interference there from the top.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I'm excited just to see what happens. It's, like we said, this is like a huge part of the Jets fan base. But it will be nice to both have the momentum of a new head coach and potentially a pretty new roster, which we don't really see very often. And then on top of that, you know, hopefully, God willing, we'll be fans in the building, you know, in September. And it'll just, I think that hurt them a lot this year. I mentioned this with Connie last week, that bad teams felt like they were so much worse this year. And I don't know, I think this happened to the Giants as well. Those games where you might get down 7-0, but the crowd's still into it. And like, there's no crowd, and then all of a sudden it's 14-0, it's 21-0. It's like a dead silent stadium, and you get punched in the face. It's just like, it's the Jets need the crowd back. I think that's a huge thing for the fan base and the players in general.
So you didn't think the piped in crowd noise did it, Will, huh?
Nah, once the San Francisco game, they had 400 guys injured, and I'm like, this team looks dead. There's just no, I just didn't feel like the energy.
Oh, there's no doubt.
It just crazy. You could tell, like, even though Kansas City or Cleveland maybe had, I don't know, 15,000 people, and it doesn't look like a lot, but even here, the Knicks, you know, and Knicks and Rangers game the last week or two, and the Nets, like, you can hear 3,000 people. It makes a difference. And I definitely think that'll be a big thing for the Jets, you know, in September.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I think football in particular is such a game of emotion. And when you are playing in this just silent stadium, it was weird. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen in covering football all these years. It's just not normal for these guys. And I think that they do feed on that crowd noise. And I think the teams, you gave a couple of examples of Cleveland and the Chiefs and Dallas. They had a lot of fans in their stadium, and it makes a difference. And it's important. So hopefully we will get to that point where we do get fans back. I think we will. I think the NFL is thinking about full stadiums. They're optimistic about that. I don't know if I'd go that far, but I think it'll be a huge difference league-wide, because everyone's going to have fans at some point.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I guess we'll do like a little bit of a throwback. Do you have some, either a favorite team or some favorite players you've covered, you know, of the Jets over the years? I mean, obviously a lot of the easy ones stick out, but do you have any, like, a team that maybe was really fun for you to cover, or just a couple of players that were great interviews or fun locker room guys?
How much time we got?
As much time as you want to come on.
Well, I mean, the Jets have been, I've had the honor and privilege, as Chad Pennington would say, of covering both of these Jets and Giants teams. Different dynamics for both teams. The Jets are, you know, it's much more of a, you know, emotional fan base. Giants a little bit more staid and more, you know, traditional. But the Jets, they've been a lot of good teams. So I start with that, you know, the Parcells teams. It's probably the most interesting time. They were good. They were newsworthy. You had Keyshawn. You had Corbett. Vinny Testaverde was just great to cover. And I remember covering him actually when he was in Cleveland for Belichick. He won his first playoff game. I'll never forget that. I think he beat the Patriots.
He might have, yeah. I was like, my first like Jets memory was like probably the 98 team, because I had a picture of Keyshawn, and that's like I was five, so I started playing. Like, that was my first year of tackle football.
Was, oh, wow.
That 98. Yeah, so, like, Keyshawn was my favorite guy, and, like, I played receiver my whole life, and probably should have played tight end, but Keyshawn, right. I thought I was Keyshawn.
Keyshawn's a good dude. I would love covering Keyshawn, and he was so newsworthy. And
you're always going to get – he's a – yeah. I was going to say, he's always going to give you a quote, but it's not even meant in a bad way. It's just like he's just always been the same way since he was in USC.
Yeah. I met him on a boat going around the circle line boat going to the Statue of Liberty. Back in the day, they'd bring the draft choices in, and we'd meet with them on the Hudson River at these at this dock, Chelsea Piers, I think. And then we'd like literally go on a boat ride and just talk to them. First time, incredibly engaging personality, and he showed it on the field. You know, that 98 team was excellent. You know, Curtis, everything you want in a football player, tough Hall of Fame caliber talent. And he was such a leader. And Parcells kind of, you know, leading the way out of just the nightmare of the Kotite years. And that's what, you know, Jet fans should hang on to, because, you know, you're coming from the Gase years, similar to the Kotite years, 2 years, horrible football. And then you get the answer. Now, Saleh is obviously a less proven commodity than Parcells, but, you know, that's the hope. And that kind of energy was incredible. I mean, Bill did as good a coaching job in 98 as anybody I've ever seen. And you know what? He's probably most proud of his coaching job in 99.
I was just going to say, that team was probably felt a lot, at least in my memory, and I may be revisionist history, but felt a lot like 2010 and 2011, where the team was really good, and then the Jets followed it up with, like, so much expectation, and they were actually, like, preseason, you're talking about, like, are the Jets going to be a Super Bowl team? And then, obviously, Vinny getting hurt, you know, again, tearing the Achilles against New England. But, I don't know, Ray Lucas won, what, he won 8 games with Ray Lucas? And, and didn't Tom Tupa play, like, throw 2 touchdowns or something like that?
Yeah, quarterback, you know, the punter. No, and you know, I've known Parcells a long time, and he goes back to that year. He still talks about, I should have gone to Lucas earlier. I just couldn't pull the trigger on that one. Right? It's like 25 years, 30 years later, and he's
won multiple right? Super Bowls, has been with multiple teams, and it looks back on such a fine moment.
I know. But that he was most proud of getting to 8-8 with that team, based on the circumstances that were created really by the Vinny injury right off the bat.
It's crazy to look back at it. I've gone back and forth with people a lot the last couple of weeks of, like, this decade has been really tough as a Jets fan. Obviously, you know, 2015 sticks out because it was the one year they were obviously very competitive. And but you look back at how good they were. Oh, we obviously talked about they, you know, kind of floundered at the end with not far of tearing the bicep and just threw a million interceptions and, like, just kind of lost it. But 2009, obviously, they were, like, AFC title game 2010. I think that's probably the most talented Jets team I've ever seen, just, like, the amount of Hall of Famers. I know they were at the end of their career, but you've got Revis, LT, Jason Taylor all in one defense, for David Harris, who I think is one of the most underrated Jets of all time, just from his – who's a rock. And then, like, it's crazy to look back at some of these teams. The Herm year – I thought Herm Edwards was a great head coach, and I thought he had a bunch of – I know it didn't end great, but the beginning was 2001, I think. They lost the Raiders a couple times, but they beat Peyton in a home playoff game 41-0, and I think that should stick out the fans.
Yeah. The Rex years are certainly way up there in terms of, you know, how good they were and how memorable they were. So there's no question that was a great time to cover it. You know, we went from Mangini, who was just a robot and, you know.
Difficult interview.
Right. Difficult interview. And then all of a sudden you go to Rex and you're like, oh my God, you know, Rex, just live. Just keep living, because
I feel like it's one from you having to think of, like, what good question can I ask to get even a small answer, and to you being like, how's your day? And Rex is like, we're going to win a Super Bowl. And you're like, oh, okay, thanks for making my job easy. that was an interesting way to come in.
One of the best interviews I had was with Rex in the back hallway off the media room in, I don't know, one of those, you know, AFC championship game years. And we talked about Belichick. He goes, hey, I'm telling you, you know, I didn't come here to kiss his rings. I came here to kick his ass. And I'm like, oh, gold, gold. Oh,
this is, I can't wait for this, publish this.
It was in. No, it's been in the paper.
He's funny.
I got ass in Newsday. That was a big accomplishment. It's like, you know, we're very, very conservative there. But he was like that. He was just so alive. Then when it went south, I think the wheels fell off a little quicker, because when you have that kind of coach with that kind of charisma and it goes bad, you know, expectations go up and the criticism gets a little bit more intense. And on there, you know, he goes to Buffalo and he beat the Jets, right, in a night game. And we're sitting there in the press conference and I ask him a question. And he goes, oh, you. So those are, for reporters, those are incredible memories. I mean, he brought it alive. And he brought it alive for fans, more importantly. He made being a Jet fan very exciting, very fun, very exciting. Yep, no question.
Yeah, no, I always try to look back, and I'm definitely I can be a glass half empty guy, because it's hard not to be as any Jets fan or any New York fan of sports team over the last probably 20 years since, I don't know. I mean, yeah, there was a little blip in the end of the decade where the Giants won a Super Bowl, the Jets went to 2 title games, the Giants were good again, and the Yankees were good and stuff. But generally, the last probably 5 to 6 years have been really hard for, you know, a New York fan from, it doesn't matter what sport. I mean, now it's exciting. You've got the Knicks look good. I mean, I'm a Nets fan. I'm probably the only Nets fan that listens to this, or, you know, is a Jets fan, but the Nets obviously have superstars. The Jets and Giants, I think, should both be much better next year. I don't see a reason. I mean, I'm not sold on Daniel Jones, but I think the roster as a whole, I think they should be better. Like, it's interesting to see, like hopefully it's going to flip here where it's going to be a lot more interesting to cover instead of, well, who are they drafting? Like, it's the after week one.
I know. I mean, and here's the transaction that kind of sums it all up. When the Yankees re-signed Brett Gardner, is the last New York athlete to be connected to a championship.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I didn't even, oof.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge Brett Gardner fan, so that makes me even more upset.
I'm a Gardner fan.
No, I mean, I like him. I'd rather somebody else get at bats, but.
Yeah, but I mean, but that's how long it's been since we've had a championship team in New York. So
that's scary. I was a freshman in high school and the Yankees won. I was the first year, because it was the first year of the new stadium, and I went to like all the playoff games, and I look back at it and I'm like, I should have valued this a little more, because we haven't been back in a long time. And I mean, obviously Steve Cohen and stuff, hopefully, you know, get a couple Subway Series, maybe it'd be nice, but like the old days.
I have a younger brother who took his son to a baseball game and it was David Wells's no hitter. So, you know, first game, like, it's all downhill from there. Right?
My first Jets game was 290, and it was 2000. Vinny Testaverde's year where the game were against the Ravens. I think it's 2000, and they need to win to get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And my dad drove me down first game. I'm like 6 years old, and, you know, in Baltimore, thinking that was a good idea, and that's probably the best defense or one of the best defenses ever. And threw, you know, four
yards, right?
Yeah. Anybody like? Yeah, then it's like they started throwing picks, and it's like I'm getting heckled by Ravens fans. Yeah. I've been defensive ever since.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. Vinny was, it was a game performance. And he was valiant in defeat. And
yeah, it was always. He had a long career.
Yeah,
like a really long career, right? I bet you he probably could still sling it around a little bit on the field.
Absolutely, Vinny played. And he played in Dallas. He could throw it.
Carolina at the end, maybe, or something for him and Kerry. I remember vividly, it was like Kerry Collins and Vinny Testaverde both at like the back. And it was like, how did this happen?
Well, he's got, like, you know, his deep pass is like Joe Flacco. Like, Flacco will throw that deep pass in his sleep when he's 70. And same with Vinny. They just, you know, once you have that touch on that long pass, and that, you know, that keeps you employed for a long time.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you remember this. I was watching an interview with Keyshawn about the other day. I was watching something about the 98 season just it popped up. And Keyshawn was like, we would be going through warmups and it'd be cold. I think it was the Jacksonville game, maybe. He's like, dude, can you not throw it so hard? You're breaking my fingers. Like, he's like, relax, Vinny. It's funny to look back at him. Yep. Sure. No, but I appreciate you, obviously, taking some time, and hopefully we'll have, some more exciting things to talk about, obviously, as the, once the Jets figure out who they're going to draft, and, hopefully leading up to some, wins in the, early part of the season, so fans don't get upset by end of September.
hopefully it's better, Will, for you and a lot of fans. You pay your dues. I admire Jet fans for their resiliency and stick-to-itiveness. It's not easy, you put all that time and energy into something. You go to those tailgates, you go to the stadium, and hopefully you go back to the stadium, and it's tough when things don't work out. So hopefully they're on the right track with Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas, and kind of build this thing the right way.
Yeah, we'll make sure to try to follow Bob on Twitter at Bob Glauber, and then check his workout in Newsday, and thanks for having me on.